Well, good morning. It's a delight to be here, and I appreciate the hospitality of RMIT to allow me to come and visit. And I would also like to reiterate my thanks to the Institution of Engineers, who have actually made this whole trip possible of bringing me back to Australia so that I could come and talk to various people around the country about this incredible experience, and also my appreciation to the Royal Aeronautical Society for letting me come and spend some time in Melbourne and share this experience. What I'm going to do is talk about the flight by starting with a few slides which will give you a sense of some of the pre-flight preparation that goes into making a shuttle flight work and the enormous expenditure of effort. And then for the flight itself, from launch onwards, I'm going to narrate a video that I have which shows some of the highlights of the flight, and I think it will give you a good sense of what it's like to be in space and in microgravity on a day-to-day basis. Then after that, I'll take questions and perhaps we can just talk about it and some of the experiences with questions from everyone here in the auditorium. Okay, this is just the crew mission patch, which was we designed to capture symbolically some of the elements of the payloads that we carried, and it's the mission patch that we wore while we were flying. This is where it really gets interesting. This is my launch. This is 19th of May of this year at 6:30 in the morning Florida time, and I am up in that little window right there, the one on the right, and I'm looking out what's going on behind me, and it got my attention. I look at pictures like this with great fondness sometimes, but I have to admit I also look at pictures like this sometimes and think, good Lord, you'd have to be crazy to ride in that thing. But it is an amazing ride. It was a great experience. And you may think, well, this is where a shuttle flight starts. But actually, it's not. It starts long before that. And for us, it started about 10 or 11 months before when we were assigned to the crew to work together. The six of us came together to work on the flight. And I'd like to just acknowledge the other members of the crew, since this was a six-person crew. As Colonel John Casper was the mission commander of the U.S. Air Force. Colonel Kurt Brown was the pilot, also from the U.S. Air Force. And there were commanders Mario Runco and Dan Bush of the U.S. Navy, who are mission specialists, and Dr. Mark Garneau of the Canadian Space Agency that made up the six-person crew. Also shown here is one of the payloads we carried. And you see here it's called Space Hab. And that stands for Space Habitation Module. What it is a pressurized module that goes into the payload bay of the orbiter and is connected with a tunnel through to the living quarters, a tunnel and an airlock, through to the living quarters of the shuttle. And we could go back in there and conduct various experiments. We carried a whole lot of experiments in this module you see here, looking at the effect of weightlessness on various physical and chemical processes. And you'll see a little more of that in the video. I don't want to give the impression that an astronaut's life is sort of all flying and so on, because actually we spend an awful lot of time in the classroom, and once we got assigned to this flight we immediately spent a great deal of time studying all these various payloads and all these experiments that we were going to fly. We had to learn how they operated, we learned what made them work, and importantly we had to learn how to deal with any problems or any malfunctions that could come up in flight, because if something goes wrong in flight, we have to fix it. There's no one else who can do it. So we spent a lot of classroom time doing this. The second payload that you'll see in the video is this one here. And there's really two elements to this. There's the lower element here, and I'll refer to that as a Spartan spacecraft. That was its name, Spartan. That's just the NASA term for this spacecraft. And what this is a free-flying satellite that you release from the orbiter, and it can fly in space by itself for a few days and conduct experiments. And usually it's used for astronomical observations, but what we had was, as shown on top of it, you see here, this is an experiment called the inflatable antenna. And what this is an experiment that's designed to show that you could make very large structures in space, in this case, a radar-type antenna, through an inflation, basically a big balloon that you eject out into space and pump it full of gas, and it adopts the shape that you want, in our case, this large antenna. And you'll see that in the video too. Here is the second satellite that we deployed. It's this small unit you see here, small little satellite test unit. This is actually still in space. It's going to naturally deorbit and burn up sometime next year, we think. But what we're looking at here is deploying a satellite to test the idea that you can use the very, very weak forces that exist in orbit, natural forces, to get a stable attitude to the satellite. Let me explain what I mean. If you can imagine a satellite orbiting around the Earth, say it carries a camera taking pictures of the Earth, you want it always looking at the same point on the Earth. Now, to do that, that means you've got to have some sort of complex system to keep the satellite pointed in that direction all the time. It's called an attitude control system. And that's very complicated. It also means you have to carry propellant, little rockets, to keep turning the satellite so it's always pointing the way you want. So you have to carry fuel. So that's complex and is a problem. What we're looking at here is taking advantage of some very weak forces in low Earth orbit, primarily the fact that there's some atomic gases up there and a magnetic field up there, which you can actually use to form a stable attitude of a satellite. And so what we had to do was deploy this satellite and then track it for 3 days to see how it moved on orbit, to see how those various forces in orbit affected the motion of this satellite and would it actually form a stable orbit. And it did, and you'll see that too. So those are some of the major payloads we carry. We also carried a host of other experiments of one kind and another in the payload bay, but I won't go into details of those. While we were going through this fairly extensive process of training to operate all of these payloads, down at the Kennedy Space Center, our vehicle was being prepared for flight. And for those of you who know the shuttle system, you'll know that there's 3 major elements to it. There's the orbiter itself, the winged vehicle that we fly in. It is mated to a large external tank, which feeds fuel to the engines of the orbiter. And on each side of that are 2 white solid rocket boosters that provide most of the thrust during liftoff. Well, all of those elements come together in Florida and are stacked together in a large assembly building. And this shows the beginning stages of that. This shows one of the solid rocket boosters being prepared for launch and stacked. This is actually only just part of the booster. There's 3 pieces that make up the whole booster. And this is the aft segment, and this is the rocket nozzle on the bottom of the booster being lifted up and mounted onto the launch platform, and other pieces will be brought in and mated to it. In fact, you see here one of those pieces. This is the forward nose cone on a solid rocket booster being assembled, ready for flight. And in here you can see the lines and the parachutes that go with this, because after these boosters have burned off their fuel, which happens about 2 minutes into the flight, they're ejected away from the shuttle, they're blown off, and they fall back down to Earth, and then they parachute into the water. They're recovered, refurbished, and used again. And these are the parachutes that will actually bring it down to Earth after they've carried us up into the atmosphere. Okay, the next element that comes in is the large external tank. These tanks are actually built in Louisiana and shipped around the coast by barge to the Kennedy Space Center on the east coast of Florida. And there's really 2 tanks in one here. The upper part is an oxygen tank, and the lower part, the lower about two-thirds, is the hydrogen tank. And it contains about 500,000 gallons of super cold propellant, liquid hydrogen and liquid oxygen, which feeds the main engines of the orbiter. And this shows the tank being wheeled into the assembly part to be mated to the rest of the elements. And this picture here will just give you some idea of the scale of this tank. It's a monster. You can see 2 of my crewmates standing here. And this is the belly of the tank. And you see these large trusses here and these points here. This is where the orbiter will actually be mated to the tank. So these trusses are what take the thrust loads during the launch. So that's why they're such strong structures. And down here is the feed line. There's one here and another one over here where the fuel is fed through. These feed lines are about 17 inches in diameter, about so big. And they feed fuel into the engines at the rate of 3,000 pounds of fuel a second. That's why they're so big. This shows one of those engines. After each flight, the engines from the orbiter go through a very extensive refurbishment, a very extensive cleaning process, and very detailed inspection to make sure that they have good integrity for the next flight. And they're then brought back into the assembly building and actually mated into the orbiter. And this here is the aft end of the orbiter Endeavour that I flew. You can see some of the thermal protection tiles on it here and the body flap. And these engines will be mounted in these three cavities here, these three engines. These three engines burn the liquid hydrogen and the liquid oxygen and create thrust that brings us on into orbit. And the thrust that those engines create is about 430,000 pounds per engine. So these are pretty strong engines. They're really a pretty remarkable piece of engineering, actually. And they're refurbished and installed in the orbiter. And all the systems in the orbiter are refurbished and prepared for flight. One element of the orbiter that goes through very extensive examination after each flight are the tiles. As you know, the shuttle is surrounded by these silica tiles, and these are what provide protection against the heat of re-entry. There's about 30,000 of them around the vehicle, and during re-entry they glow red hot. The vehicle gets that hot. It gets over 1,000 degrees, so the whole vehicle is red hot, and these tiles provide protection of that heat to the crew and to the systems. But it's inevitable that some of them get damaged during re-entry, so we go over them very carefully and replace any that are damaged. And you can see a technician here doing it by hand, installing the tiles on the base of the orbiter. It's a very labor-intensive process, but they do provide a remarkable degree of protection. Once the orbiter has been cleaned and prepared for flight, new engines installed, the thermal protection, the tiles repaired, it's then brought into the assembly building, as you can see here, and turned vertical. It's lifted in a large crane and turned vertical, and then mated to the external tank and the solid rocket boosters. And you can see the external tank here. And here are those truss fittings that I showed you before. So that gives you some idea of the scale of this picture. This from here to here is about 180 feet long. And there's about another 100 feet here. So this is a very, very big piece of engineering, bringing all these elements together. You can see the two solid rocket boosters and the orbiter being lowered and mated to the external tank. Once it's mated to the external tank, it's then put on this crawler tractor arrangement and taken from the assembly building, you can see in the background here, down a crawlway and up, and it's mounted on the flame trench at the launch pad here and prepared for flight. Excuse me with the focus a bit. And ground umbilicals are hooked into it that give it all the commands for launch. Fuel lines are hooked into it on the ground. It's loaded with all the propellants and all the reactants that we use on board, and it's prepared for flight. We as a crew go down about 2 weeks before flight and go into the vehicle, strap in, and go through a complete dry run of the whole countdown sequence and in preparation for flight. If that's successful, then we come back a couple of weeks later and we do it for real.